really, I think we really have to appeal to staff now, looking at Mr. Herman's, although he's also been very busy. No, I've moved out of those ranks. I am now with full support. So I will never be able to refer to, as the Honourable Van der Westhuizen has learned, that I can't find something. He now knows that that was not just a loose expression. He saw evidence of that and then was very happy that he'd seen a secretary to whom he was introduced. But I don't want to waste time on that, but I think that that is an important step forward for the chairperson of the portfolio committee. But I refer to other staff primarily because this has occurred before. People come in, I don't know who they are, they sometimes sit right alongside committee members. I don't know if they're new members of the DA or the ANC or what. And then I learn that actually they're from this university as interested members of the public. And I had that experience this week when a young man who's been coming to the committee meeting for about on 8 occasions, whom I thought was with our staff, turned out to be from the media running a community issue called the Friends of Manenberg Community. And because we were cheering at the time and rushing to certain facilities to which you generally proceed alone and rush back to the committee, I thought he was referring to the Constitution, to which I said, well, possibly Friday. I learnt this morning he was referring to something else and not the Constitution, referring to the Cold War, to which I thought I was clearly not an authority, and I will be redirecting him elsewhere. So that's why you saw me in and out on this telephone this morning. So when we see members here, they are very welcome to attend. The public is here, but it's useful for us to know who's who. And up to now, I've had that understanding. It had nothing to do with whoever walked in this morning, but rather with what had happened yesterday and the day before and the day before. Thank you very much for your understanding. We were due to start at 8:30. The tea only arrived at 9, so we need to restore that. We're dealing with the final leg of the National Lotteries Board. And we always knew this would be a difficult, complex process, but perhaps we didn't realize how difficult the last milestone would be. I certainly didn't realize this. And I doubt if there's any honourable member sitting here who envisaged that we would experience some difficulties. And I say this because I feel very proud of the fact that the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry did a thorough process. We actually got 84 CVs. We studied the advert. We critiqued the shortcomings of the advert, and we added to this by saying we've had orientation, we've analysed some of the issues, and we believe we need a new set of, we need a criteria here for the candidates who sit on the NLB. We drew up criteria which this committee passed. We had people passionate about certain areas who expressed that passion, some who didn't. We also had certain honourable members from the committee who retained the integrity of the process by recusing themselves, and who also had acted very honourably, because I must make it clear that the legislation does not preclude or exclude anyone who's in Parliament nominating a member. I think these were issues that we said we needed to address, if you recall. And So, you know, all of this was done in good faith and with integrity by every member sitting here. And indeed, we were sorry to lose such a member throughout the process, but we had to accept it. But what we did say is that if there was anyone who came before us, who we suddenly realized, I didn't know then, but I know now, that I know this person, or I've met this person, or we've worked together, we should acknowledge it. And we did. I do not know of anyone on this committee who did not do that, including myself on one occasion. I think the Honourable Impash Lely raised the issue and also noted this publicly. And I think there was someone else. So these issues were shared with the committee and we proceeded. We then had to go back a step. We drew up. We decided as a multi-party team, a committee, to go for a task team which would process their work through the chairperson and the whip and bring it through to the committee. We went through that process. We kept people informed. I think this is the point. I was actually asked, trying to see if the person is sitting here, to make a press statement. I was asked this on three occasions before the process at all began. When I sat on the first day of the interviews, and again in the middle, and I eventually said to the person who is a parliamentary newly employed communications officer of Parliament, I think it would be premature for the chair to make any comment before the process is concluded. Perhaps I should have shared that with you earlier. But I said, you are very welcome. You've sat in on all of the meetings here to start off with the introduction, which would be obviously along the lines of the portfolio of Committee of Trade and Industry did the X, Y, Z. And then we'll fill in the middle. And that will be a committee position. And I need to make that clear. So I haven't even formulated that yet because we're still closing. And having got that far, we then drew up a list of 23, as you know. And I advised all members to take this to political parties, principals, share it with them, and come back prepared for the interviews. We had a guide drawn up, which we adopted as a guide. We did. And we said we would use that to guide us, and then that would also assist us with any extra information we had, such as commentary. And I know that many people, including myself, made extensive notes. And then we would come to the decision making. And we reached that point yesterday when the final decisions were being taken. We actually thought we would conclude yesterday. Sorry, my apologies, Wednesday. We did not. Now, I since realized when you sleep overnight and you think more clearly, you study some of the workings of other committees in this process, that actually it is not a unique experience in Parliament, that actually many committees undergo this difficult challenge of trying to reach a convergence, not at the beginning, at the end. And that this is due to us coming from different backgrounds on a very personal level, on a political level, on all kinds of levels. It makes up who we are as people. Who are we? And we bring that to Parliament as representatives of the people. And I've accepted that there will be divergence, perhaps. I do hope we will have convergence. But I must also indicate that all parties have indicated to me that possibly their own choices, can I put it that way, candidates. When I say all parties, I obviously am a member of the African National Congress. I am, that's why I'm here. I didn't come out, there is no such thing as an independent, some out of the blue. And I heard from them as well, from the whip. I heard from the DA, heard from the IFP. There isn't a party sitting in this committee that up with the names that are on the table so far, even those we haven't agreed on, that was entirely their choice. You know, that is exactly who and what we wanted, because we accepted that we would have to negotiate. There are many union people here, and the first thing you learn in a union is that this is not a consultation. It's a negotiation, and you know what that means. It means you go in, you'll come out with something slightly different. It's not a consultation, and we accept that. Now, I don't think I've ever spoken to you this long before we started, and I don't think I will again. I won't take up your time. But I think it's important, and why I believe it's important is we're going to work together for 4 years. At least I hope so. And I would like us, even if we don't agree as we close, to accept that there will be divergences and that there cannot always be total convergence. I think we must just accept that. But I do hope that there will be convergence. Let me say that. On that note then, I would hope, I'm counting now that we have got at least 8 members. I'm checking with the committee secretary as to what apologies he has.
Chairperson, we have a standing apology for Mr. Bashlele, who indicated last week that he will be absent for the whole of the week's deliberations. We also have an apology from Ms. Lubenia, whose mother has taken seriously ill and she had to leave yesterday for home. So those are the only two apologies that I have received from members.
In fact, the committee secretary didn't indicate that his own mother is critically ill, which is why he wasn't always available yesterday. Very ill. He's critically ill. So I'm sure on behalf of the committee, we wish your mum well. And I would hope the committee doesn't try to burden the committee secretary this afternoon and this evening. On that note, we do have a quorum. I'm really looking initially at our own membership of the committee, right. And let us move ahead. I think the committee secretary may like to brief us as to where we are. I don't want to cloud the process. Honourable Marie.
Chairperson, there's 2 members that I don't know. So are they from, I presume, from the ANC? But I don't know them at all. So whether they are mercenaries or to make up a quorum, I don't know what the purpose of that is and why they are here. But they've never been here. I've never seen them in the committee. They've never been part of the deliberations. And I am not so sure whether it will be ethical for people that have never been here to then take part in a decision. And that, in my opinion, hopefully that will not be the case. But if it's the case, it might certainly implicate the credibility of the committee and the whole process that you have described. So hopefully that will not be the case, but I don't know who they are, and you also haven't introduced them to the rest of the committee.
Matter of fact, I was just waiting to see the register myself. I have already indicated the importance of knowing who we are. you know. But let me say this. In fact, I am aware that they are members of the ANC. Let me say this at the outset. And as we all know, all honourable members are allowed into any meeting, but quite clearly, we will be dealing with what we call the, the substantive interviewing issues and this kind of thing with the core members, which is why I actually pointed out as the chairperson, have we got 8 members of the committee here? And we do. We have 8 members of the portfolio committee. We have 2 other honourable members of parliament who are members of the ANC. And we have, I'm just being pointed out to me, that we have the Honourable Chavasa sitting, yes, if you raise your hand, and Dr. Pratt.
Billy,
I thought so, but then it looked like P-R-A-T-T. You see, I can't read this writing, but I only know another name, and it isn't Dr. Pillay, so it's some other name, and it was not probably registered here. I'm now talking to everyone sitting here. There are 8 members of the ANC here. There are 2 members of the DA. There's 1 member of the IFP who took part in 90% of the process, who's not here. I would obviously appeal to the whip of the ANC, the Honourable Hadebe, that as the whip, he would obviously, I'm sure, lead his party with the members fully on the committee first, and the others, I think you indicated to me you brought them because you didn't think we were having a quorum. Is that correct?
That's true,
Honourable Pillay?
Chairperson, we just want to address the issue about credibility about the process. I think we just need to inform the Honourable Member that we are a very organised political party, and as such, this has come to caucuses, to our organisations, where names have been discussed. Pros and cons of all the names have been discussed, so it's nothing unethical about us being here, because we have been fully briefed. And as a political party, we understand the position, and I don't think we should raise issues about ethics, because that is a veiled insinuation about our integrity.
I think and I know, Honourable Maria, you know this because we worked together before on other committees, that from all parties we get different members from time to time when others are overseas, particularly smaller parties. The whip of that party puts someone else there because either the chair has called for the party to make up a quorum or not. I know I did that when I was whip of the Joint Budget Committee. I then had appealed to your senior whip once to send someone who was not a member of the committee to make up the quorum, and that person was sent. The rules of Parliament indicate that any honourable member of Parliament, may be present at a committee meeting. Those are the rules. And I think we're all aware of that. But I think I've made my position clear as chair. My position is one as chair that is saying, clearly, members who have participated directly in the process should be those who in the first instance comment. And that is why I directed my point to the whip. But I think this process of the National Lotteries Board is of major interest to all parties at the moment. There isn't one party, as I thought I made clear at the beginning, that hasn't expressed to me in my capacity as chair of their issues concerning the NLB. There isn't one sitting here today. And I must make that clear. And I respect that. And as I've said to all of them, I honestly want to ensure we retain the integrity of the process. I have said that. Honourable Van de Westhuizen.
Chairperson, I accept that the rules of Parliament allow for people to, for members to be parachuted in to make up quorums. What we, however, have here is a selection process that took part, and it was said, if not accepted by this committee, that only people that have witnessed the candidates, that have been able to score them in terms of their performance during the interviews, are able to really then judge who were the better candidates and the more suited candidates for this position. This is what was said in this committee before. What now is happening is a complete deviation from that previous position, and therefore I cannot see that the integrity of the process, that we can still talk of the integrity of the process. As a matter of fact, I want to ask what was then the purpose of the interviews if people who have never observed these candidates can now bring out a vote in favour of certain candidates, candidates that they, if they have seen their CVs, have only seen on paper. Thank you.
Can I just say one thing before I acknowledge the Honourable Mariano Ambrosini? He has just walked in literally now as I've been talking. He has not been a member of the interviewing process. Am I now to ask him to leave? No, because he's entitled to be here. And I think I must make it clear that every political party is required, before they send any of their members back to take a decision, any, to actually be fully briefed by those serving on a particular committee. And that political party, either through a caucus or through a smaller meeting, will engage with those committee members and share the political position of that respective political party. That is how Parliament works. I think what you have here is Dr. Pillay indicating that we too had done exactly the same thing. If we had not done that, we could go and be tested in a constitutional court. And I'm not prepared to allow that. I'm not prepared to go from this day to the next day and a party comes to me and says, you never gave us time. I will not go that route. So I'm going to ask at this stage as chairperson only those members who are on this committee just to participate in this little short engagement and ask you to respect that. That's, by the way, not covered in the rule of Parliament. It's just my request. Honourable Mariano Ambrosini.
Have I become Mariano, but being as it may. thank you, Madam Chairman. First of all, I came here because I received notice from the secretary that there was yesterday on an email a quorum problem. I got to my office and realized that my colleague was not here and I came here. That's why I came. The reason why I speak is not on the merits but on the legalities, and I think that legalities are a matter of merits, because whatever it happens to personal, I feel we must always uphold the legality. Only members of this committee may vote under the rules. Only members of this committee, principal and alternative member, may vote. Therefore, the quorum is only in respect of those whom can vote. One cannot bring in people who cannot vote and reckon their presence into the voting. Any member can join a committee, has the right to talk, has the right to participate. It doesn't have the right to vote. If he's not a member of the committee, may not be reckoned within the quorum requirement. I came here to lend my physical presence to the quorum requirement. Then there is the point raised by Mr. Van der Westhuizen, which I think is a correct point from a political, ethical viewpoint, not necessarily from a relevant view, from a legal viewpoint, because the people, we receive mandates from political party. We're told, we are told what to do and what not to do. And therefore, by my being here, I could carry the instruction of my colleague and do as she would do had she been here. So I act with her knowledge. I won't, because I just happen not to have received an instruction, and as I said, I'm here just to lend my physical presence, and I will abstain if there is any voting to be done. But I just want to make this contribution in point of legality.
I think this is why I checked with the committee secretary as to whether we had a quorum. Before you walked in, we had a quorum. No, I don't want you to leave. We didn't have one when you were communicated with. And I also was unaware the Honourable Lavinia would not be here, sorry. So it was on that basis that we communicated the urgency of all members being present here. It was on that basis. So, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think this committee has set certain processes in place and decisions it has taken before, that even those members of the committee who were not part of the interviews could not speak when those candidates were dealt with. Now, I think that process we have done it properly. So, but what is also critical here is the issue that any member of parliament can go into any committee and sit, except if it is the committee, joint committee on intelligence, except that one. In all the other committees, you can go there as a member of parliament, because you are coming from a particular constituency, to come and listen and make contribution on behalf of your constituency. But I think that we laid it out here in this committee, that the people who are going to participate and make the final decision are those who were part and parcel of the process. So I don't see any deviation from that. I don't see any deviation. I don't know why people are worried about that. But what is also critical is that the issue of the quorum was because we could not delay this meeting. The issue of the quorum was also critical. So it is fine. You can have extra people, but the people who are going to take the decision were there in the process all over. Thank you.
I really would like to close this because the committee secretary has assured me, this is where I also get advice from, but I will also call in our advocate through Ms. Herling to join us. But right now, I'm not familiar, I have to be share with you, I don't know the rule book blow by blow. So this is why we have a committee secretary, but I want for the record to indicate that the committee secretary has already indicated section 133 of what is in the rules of the National Assembly under the quorum, and we have covered that. We're going backwards now because we've covered that, because I asked, were there 8 members here? As long as it was before the Honourable Ambrosini walked in. Yes. However, when he said he would be back on his way to his office, I have asked him to stay. Because you see, I'll tell you why. Obviously, one can't issue a compliance, as it were. But it would be my request of chair for him to stay, because the IFP were present, although not himself, in all of these proceedings. And I think up to now, where he can, he has participated. But I think he would respect the decision, which says that our committee has moved forward on the basis of what the whip has already referred to. I don't want to repeat it, because it is the same point that the Honourable van der Westhuizen has said. There's no difference in that point. So I truly want to close this now and move on. Honourable van der Westhuizen.
Chairperson, you can shut me down if you want to, but can I quote from the Act? And the Act says that The relevant committee of the National Assembly has made recommendations to the minister. My question is, are those two members that have joined us today, out of the blue, as I've said, that have been parachuted in, are they now members of this committee? Can you please check the attendance register? Because that is a legal point here.
I know that aspect of the rule very clearly, having served as a whip in the previous term of Parliament. That as a matter of fact, any honourable member of Parliament, I say honourable because if you have been suspended by the Speaker, you may not participate. But any honourable member of Parliament may participate, observe, listen, and not vote. I hope I'm making myself very clear.
I'm sorry, you're not acknowledging the point I made.
I am coming to that. I'm certainly coming to that. And so, and that is, I think I'm repeating myself when I have said, in the first place, there are 8 members of this portfolio committee present. 1. 2, we are not the Portfolio Committee on Defence or Intelligence, which has slightly different rules. We are the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. And therefore, the doors of this committee are not closed to honourable members of this committee. But we are subject to the observation of the rules of the Assembly. We are subject to that. This committee itself took a further position. A further position, over and above the rule, can I put it that way? Over and above this, we agreed that it would be important for those present during interview process, which we considered a critical part of the process, to contribute substantively to this. We did not exclude other members who recused themselves, who had been ill, who missed half the meetings to participate. But we said the interviews were very important. Now, members, there are 2 ways to do this, or more, as I learned as an academic. Never ever say there are only 2 or only 3. There are 2 or more ways. The one way would be certainly to observe the national rules of the Assembly. And that's what guides the chair. But also, of course, the constitution of our country, and also, of course, the rules of Parliament in general. When we are unsure, we are advised to get legal advice from our own legally appointed advisors, appointed advisors. I've already called for the advocate to join us. I'm not a lawyer. I want to ensure that at least we stay within on that road soundly. On the other level, which is this point, the route I wish to adopt in line with that, is if we are proceeding legally, which I believe we are, then we come to what I call other issues. And that is, how do we proceed as a committee to ensure that when we've gone through this process and concluded it, we're able to retain something of substance as a platform on which to move forward for 4 years. And as a chairperson, that's also very important. Without compromising in any way the position of the committee up to this point. And I want to make that clear. And that is why I put in an appeal, and I want to share with the Honourable Pillay why I stopped the point of order. We've only had one other point of order in this committee, which I also stopped, and it was a member of the committee. and I explained why. I said, I have seen committees dissolved through points of orders continuously because it becomes a pattern. So I earnestly would like to endeavor as the chairperson to avoid a point of order where I can. And so it was not a personal direction at yourself, Honorable Pillay. I hope you understand that. But it's the way the committee has operated up to now. And I truly would like to move on, Honorable Pillay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to commend the way you're going about this. I understand the process fully. We have a quorum with existing members. Two only existing members who participated in the interviews are going to vote. But I think it's rather insulting, Honorable Chairperson, when people do not understand why I am here, he is not able to read my mind as an honorable member, I may be here for another issue, then it's insulting to say I was parachuted here. I'm an honorable member like you, sir. You don't know why I came. I have come for another issue, but I have come to listen to insults. And I really believe that that is not true why I am here. I didn't even come to participate in the vote. I understand the issue. I came, first I was insulted to say we've come here without knowledge about what the process is. I have explained I have come here with knowledge about the process because I attended the caucus. Second thing is I've come for another issue here which I was wanting to participate and take an interest in. I was not even to vote in this, and then I'm insulted to be in this meeting to say I am parachuted here. This is not the way to behave, Honorable Chair. I will not do this to them also. And we expect to be treated decently. I'm a professional person. I don't need to be insulted like this.
Honorable Pillay, Dr. Pillay, may I just say this? First of all, and I'm going to make a ruling after I've spoken. And I want to make that clear to everyone. And that is, it worried me. We were due to start at 5:30. Of course, as some members of this committee know, I was busy in my office and then coming down and being phoned left, right and centre. And I came down only at 20 to myself to find there was no quorum. No quorum. I spoke to the whip, the ANC. I made an assumption that the DA would be coming because I had had an assurance on this side. So although I didn't see them, I had some assurance. I spoke to the committee secretary in this regard to ensure that all members of this committee would be called. And then I asked him, what would happen if there was no quorum? How do we proceed? Because there's a deadline. And that's why I asked, do we have a quorum? Which we do. But if we had not had a quorum, Section 134 of the rules entitles the chairperson of a committee that when a member is not absent in the internal, both of them are absent from a meeting of the committee, the chairperson may co-opt any other assembly member to act as a member of the committee until that committee member or the alternate is no longer absent. Now, I don't want to consult this rule book again, but I will. I don't know the rule book. I must hasten to add, I have to refer to my committee secretary for that information. So my ruling is this, honourable members, is that we will proceed. If I have misled you, I will face the full wrath of the speaker. But I don't believe I am misleading you. So I do not want to take and recognize another hand from any party. I really don't, Honorable Marie. Because you see, if I listen to you and recognize your hand, let me explain, I'm going to have to recognize the ANC. And then I have no doubt I may have to recognize the IFP, who isn't holding up a hand yet, but who may. And then I don't know what time we will leave or resolve. And you know, this is worrying me. are really, if you believe that I am honestly proceeding outside the rules of Parliament, I will go and consult the Speaker now.
Sorry, Chair, I've heard from Dr. Pillay, the Honourable Pillay, that he has said that he will not partake in the vote. Yet, I've now heard that you intend to co-opt him to this committee. Okay. So he and the other member, you say, is not going to be co-opted today and they will not take part in the vote. Did I understand that?
Honourable Van der Westhuizen, I said I am reading this so you understand why I was checking to see why there was a full quorum. Full quorum of our membership. Because I have no recourse if this deadline is not met. We all know the deadline, members. I did not put this deadline on the table, neither did you. This is a deadline put here by legislation. It's a deadline that's here. And due to the deadline, it is my responsibility to ensure that we have a quorum. And you see where this is leading now. And I don't have a choice but to recognize the ANC.
Honorable Chairperson, I think you have done a wonderful job in trying to steer this committee to its board. I think it was clear when you spoke about the co-option, you were reading the rules of Parliament. So today there's no need to co-opt these two members, but they've got the right to sit here. There's nothing wrong with that. No. But when coming to voting, it is only those people of this committee who do that. So I think, Honorable Chairperson, let's continue with the work so that we can go and serve our people at the city. Thank you.
I would at least like to know that all members of the committee, I have made a ruling and I will go ahead because I do have that prerogative as chair. I have indicated that the only reason I did not wish to recognise Honourable Van der Westhuizen is because I wouldn't have no choice but to recognise the ANC. I said that before. So when I recognised him and he took advantage of that, he was fully aware that I would have to then take something from the ANC. But I don't want to take another hand. I don't want to exercise my powers as chair, but I will. So I'm really appealing to members to work together, please. So now I am not recognising another hand. I'm now going to exercise the power of the chairperson. I've made a ruling.
You're not supposed to quiet us. That's not in the spirit of this committee. It's never been in the spirit.
That is what I am appealing to you, Honourable Marie. It has never been in the spirit. That is why I appealed to you. I beg your pardon?
In terms of the rulings, chairperson, you are killing the spirit of deliberations that we've always had in this committee, and that's a pity. That's a sad day for this committee. Really, I expected a lot more and a lot different things from this committee.
It's regrettable that you feel that way. It truly is. Because, as I indicated, I have certain responsibilities as chair. My appointment as chair is a parliamentary appointment. And I'm subject to these rules as much as any other member. And I have to ensure that this committee, which is subject, is simply part of the extension of the Speaker. The Speaker. We are the committee's work under Parliament. The head of Parliament is the Speaker. The head of Parliament. We may forget that from time to time. The head of Parliament is the Speaker. So certain committees are set up. And I don't want to go down that route because I'll tell you why. I'm not an authority on the structures of Parliament. I've already acknowledged my lack of legal expertise, and I wish to acknowledge my lack of expertise in that area. But I have a choice of overruling my own ruling, which I will not do. I've seen where that ends. Or I will accept that some members, if not all members, are unhappy. And I will simply ask all members to accept that I do respect their positions. And I want to indicate to you in particular, Honourable Maria, that we've had a very sound and strong working relationship. I put that on record. And it is my hope that a relationship built over a period of time like this, working together, is strong enough to withstand differences of opinion. And that we're able to continue. My desire is simply to make our progress, and I think the ground rules are clear to members. So I do want to proceed. I myself would like to ask someone to bring me a cup of tea. And then it's customary for crack a joke or two. I thought I would share with you that I have 5 phones this morning, 5 cells. I've overtaken the Honourable Njikalala with his 2. The only difference between the Honourable Njikalala's 2 cells and my 5 cells, that I understand from my husband that these are what you call shells. They are meant for 3 grand or 4 grandchildren or something. So they're going to be playing with cellulars over the weekend with nothing in them. But they'll get all the noises and everything else. And I will retain my 1 parliamentary cell. So no, I don't have 5 parliamentary cells. I have 1. But if you see me fiddling with lots of cells, they don't have any inside. They just have the noises or something. So I share that with you because I think sometimes it's healthy to share something like that. But I hope my cup of tea will come quite soon. And we can proceed.
Thank you. Thank you.
years, committee secretary Narvel, just as he walks back in, he's going to put us on board with what he's captured as where we are. And here you are. So can you indicate to us, Mr. Herman, where we are?
Chairperson, since the last meeting of the committee has identified the following four persons as possible candidates to be recommended to the committee. For the chairpersonship, Professor Nevitanda, Mr. Nkhotsa was proposed subject to the legal opinion received from the subject to receiving of a legal opinion from the Ms. Major, which the chairperson has in her position. Then for the position of CA, Mrs. McCorker was identified, and Mr. Reddy was the other candidate that was was identified. So there's two positions outstanding that need to be recommended.
The advocate has made this available to me. I was just checking whether the committee secretary had it as well, or whether this was the only copy. And he's indicated that this is the only copy. It's taken, she's had to do consultation in this regard, which is why it's coming now. I need to read this out and also then to make this available to every member. I read out the relevant portion. She says she has 11 points before and then indicates, it is therefore my view that the extension by the minister of Mr. Nkhotsa's term outside of Section 3-4 of the Lotteries Act was ultra vires as such. The committee may disregard what the one-year extension of Mr. Nkhotsa's term by the minister and consider the candidates for appointment to the National Lotteries Board. I wish to ask the committee secretary to ensure that before we conclude this process, everyone has a copy of this. So if you can make sure that that is immediately distributed. Honourable Marais.
Chairperson, my view is also that, my view is that clearly from that letter that we have seen yesterday, that the intention was certainly not for a second term, but an extension of the original term. The dilemma that we sit with is that the minister has made a ruling at that stage, and it seems like there's no legal justification for what he has done. So somewhere along the line there was a, as he correctly said, this was ultra vires. So it was clearly unauthorized appointments and spendings per implication. How will this now be rectified? Because that is an implication. Obviously it was on the previous committee, not the one that we sit with. It's still the same portfolio committee, and it's still the same department. So I think in the past we were quite proud of the fact that the Auditor General's report was always very positive. But clearly here something has been done illegally by Parliament and by the Minister. And what are we going to do about that?
I don't think at that stage Parliament was involved, so let's not say and Parliament. Honourable Mabasa.
Colleague Chairperson, I want to assume that we are continuing from the previous meeting. and that we had thus far I agreed on the four names, but pending the legal implications of having a delegata in, and we have now received an interpretation to that effect, and the interpretation allows us to have him as a member of the board. I mean, as I listened to you. So I would move that we accept that, and then we then move to the next stage of the two other names, because the purpose for us to refer the matter to the legal interpretation was because, you know, we wanted it to be interpreted objectively outside ourselves. And now that that has been rendered, I move that we accept that, and then we then move discuss the other two names. Thanks, Colleague.
Honorable Adebe, and while you are responding, perhaps you would be able to tell us where the Honorable Njikalana is.
So thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Actually, Honorable Mabasa has covered me, because I was just going to say to that address. He just went quickly to the loo.
I'm going to leave it there. Suffice to say that I have asked for the whole letter to be, you know, the whole interpretation. As customary, that's the approach we have adopted in this committee, and that will be made available to all members immediately, it's photostated. But that is the legal opinion. The advocate's own words to me prior to me reading her interpretation, Advocate Bedger, was that she has thoroughly studied the matter, consulted, and there would be no legal impediment to an appointment. Those, you know, so, but I do want to make the letter or the opinion available to members. I want to leave that, although you will have that, a copy of that letter in about 10, 15 minutes, I must assure you, and go on to where we left off. Suffice to say, I think there were, in my recollection, some names on the table, but there was no conclusion on the matter. I hope I'm correct in my analysis there and my notes. And the names that we have were for the two posts were Mr. Shabangu, Mr. Mankochwa as one lot group, and Ms. Loyalane and Mr. Badenhorst as another group for the two vacant posts. Is that correct? Right. Now, we've had the opportunity to consult our political principles. We've had the opportunity also to review issues. So I'm opening it up again. You may, if you wish, say, even bring in fresh names, or you can retain the names you've put on the table. But I'd like you to start afresh and indicate to us which is the name you're putting forward for another position. I want that clear. So can I please see some hands? Honorable Khadebe.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you for this opportunity again to give us a chance to engage on this matter. As you said that, we should have consulted.
You are not being received.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, for this opportunity again to give us to engage on this matter. I think that we had more than enough time to consult with the interested parties, our political principal, and our colleagues on this matter. I think when I speak now, I speak from the position of the African National Congress. After applying its mind thoroughly, and then it has decided that the issue of the rural development is a priority. We know very well that South Africa has got two economies. One which is urban, vibrant, connected to the international community. We also have a community which is in the second economy. Usually it is in the rural area where there's underdevelopment, where apartheid was at its worst, So it is the imperative of this government to ensure that the people who are coming from those rural areas are being empowered. The people who are coming from those rural areas are given a chance to formulate the policies, to come with the programs which are going to ensure that they are lifted out of the poverty trap they find themselves in. They were there not because of their choice. It's because of the conquest of the past. So that's why the ANC is very strong on the issue of Ubaba Ushabangu. Ubaba Ushabangu has pulled himself through the straps of his boots. He is not educated, as he acknowledged here in this committee. But what he has done a lot of wonderful work. He understood what the people in the rural areas need. Because as he came from the background of the union, he knows what is the starvation wage. He knows how you have to negotiate for the poor class so that they get into the medical aid. They had the right to housing and all those things. So we think that he's in the best position to come and advance that dimension in the board. So as the ANC, we proudly present Mr. Shabangu as one of the candidates which must be considered for the appointment into the board. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe. The IFP is not with us, but so let me turn to the DA. Honorable Mandebeste.
Chairperson, can I just ask that the member continue so that we know the further names as well, because there is also an imperative that we want women on this board. And before we debate the merits or not of Mr. Shabangu, it's not as if we go one for the position of lawyer or practicing legal practitioner. There we had one person, and then for the position of the chartered accountant, and we also said that the chairperson's position was a little bit, you know, separate. But if you can give us the full suggestion that you have or proposal that you have, so that once we debate that, we can debate on the remainder of the positions. Thank you.
Honorable Khadebe.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think, as I said, that Mr. Shabangu is there. Number two, the issue of the women is very critical. Even I have a personal experience on what women had to experience in the past. My father passed on when I was 16 years old. It was my mother who had to take me through with her kitchen salary of 30 rand a month, who ensured that eventually I had to go to the university to be where I am today. But what is also critical is that during that time, she didn't even have the right to have the house to her own name. In order to acquire a house, she had to register it in my name as a boy. She had to register it in my name as a boy. So you can see that really we cannot play lip service when coming to the empowerment of the woman. What is critical about Ms. Loilane also is that apart from the physical impediments which she had, she was a good initiator. Where she was, she got good qualifications up to master's degree level. She was able to initiate projects on the ground. But what is also critical that when she was working in the Department of Economic Affairs in the Eastern Cape, she worked with SMEs. We know that in any country,
the highest employer in any country is the SME. That's why he's got this business acumen, which the Act demands that he must have. That business acumen cannot be taken for granted. So that's why, after thorough consideration, the ANC put Ms. Ndilane, Loliane, and the other candidates. Thank you.
Just writing the... Honourable Member Vesthuizen, he has responded to you. Perhaps you would like to
thank you, Chief.
Respond.
Do we now have all the candidates that the whip wants to put forward? So you don't have any other names? So can I just... My impression is that we've already agreed on Dr. Nebu Tandu.
That's right.
And then Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
And then that young CA, Ms. Koka. And then our attorney is that now, Mr. Nagota. Nagota.
Well, last we all agreed we wanted a clarification.
And then Shabangu and Loilani. Thank you. Chair, can I continue?
You may.
Thank you. Chair, I'm disappointed on a number of points. The first one is that this committee has accepted certain criteria from the onset, which we agreed upon and said this is what we are going to apply. This is also the process that we are going to apply, and we will do our selection on the basis of those criteria. Unfortunately, in putting forward these people, other criteria have now been taken into account, a criteria that we've not identified. It is very clear to me that the performance of the candidates during the interviews did not play any role at all. It is very clear to me that other factors such as the rural development and so on has now come forward. I therefore regret to say that I think the integrity of the process is therefore severely undermined. I've gone into this process with an open mind. I've really applied myself. I've really tried to stick to the requirements also in the Act of what people's qualities should be. And it is very clear to me that agreement that we've had in the committee is now being broken by Mr. Radebe, and he said that he does this on behalf of the ANC. I unfortunately do not see my way open to take part in such a process. I believe that we should be able to honor our own agreements, and therefore, Chairperson, I ask you if you would give me permission to then withdraw from the further deliberations of this committee. None of the arguments that Mr. Khadewi has put forward has had anything to do with the performance of any of these two candidates during the interviews. And you yourself have repeatedly, and also this morning, stated that we've agreed that interviews are a critical part, that's the word that you've used, of this process. Now, if that critical part of this process is now completely ignored, then I'm afraid, then I must say that the cost of all these interviews, I believe, has been wasteful, fruitless, and therefore I no longer see open to take part in this appointment. I can also just tell you that it is my intention to also convey this viewpoint to the Minister of Trade and Industry, and to say to him that I'm very, very disappointed. He will get a recommendation, but that recommendation, according to me, is a flawed one, and that he must act as he sees fit. Thank you.
Yes, it is regrettable that, as you say, you wish to withdraw. Before you withdraw, yes, please. So if you would just sit down before you withdraw. Let me share, as I did with you in my office, Mr. Sunderbest Hazen, I shared with you my own notes. My own notes written at the time of the interview. And as I indicated to you, and we shared a very open discussion, Mr. Shabangu, in my notes, both school-wise, as well as my several notes that I had in the book, as well as on the forms itself, made clear 3 points, apart from anything else. You're quite right by saying, you know, it was important to consider the interview. I did consider it, and I think every member did consider it important. I must say that was my impression. But like any interview process, what you perceive and others perceive may be different. As I indicated to you, it came out clearly to me, listening in the interview, that here was a nominee who understood so many of the weaknesses that currently exist in the distribution of funds to the targets that should be receiving them. People who could not fill in forms. People who should be benefiting from the NLB funds process and so on. We had a far clearer understanding than possibly anyone else who we had seen at that point. And my own notes, as I read to you, reflect that. And they acknowledge that, yes, if this is an experiential process, not necessarily backed by high qualifications, but there has been board experience in looking at the CV. And at the time we all went into the interview process, I'm sure you would accept that we did this as individuals, members of the committee. My notes were made as the chairperson, and every individual member's notes were made. So my notes are there, always, they remain there. And as I indicated to you, when I looked throughout my notes and came to the end of the process on the Tuesday or Monday, he was one of my own 7 candidates, far more than what was required, that is true. We are required to only recommend 6. But he was one of my 7, and initially I had 8. And I must share that with you. And I certainly believe that we have retained the integrity. I think as a multi-party parliament, we are the few truly multi-party parliaments, but we may differ on that. I do believe we've taken account of that. It's true, I'm sorry that the IFP are not here, I truly am, but perhaps they can hear me in their offices or where they are. But I do believe they too consulted their political parties. I would hope you did as well. And I certainly would know that the AMC did because I was sitting in the same forums as themselves with another hat on. So I know they did. And may I say that indeed we were very much on the same wavelength. My own notes. There were slight differences here and there, but I do believe that is quite natural to human, that we would not have exactly the same score, the same points, and so on. And I want to share this publicly because it would be highly regrettable if you withdrew. It is certainly not something that I can prevent, in a harsh way or anything, or legally. You have that right. But I would have hoped that you did stay on board. But that it was possible in our report to make it clear what the position was that you had. Because this is a committee report. It's not an ANC report, it's a committee report. But to withdraw from a process, unlike your colleague, the Honourable Maria, you have been far more part of the process than many on the committee. I can understand his withdrawal, and although it may share the same grounds as you now, but I really would have wanted to make an appeal, rather to allow a couple of minutes for you two to consult with yourselves and your principals, to honestly get a clear position on whether you will withdraw now. As I say, as chairperson, I want to make the commitment that this will be reflected in the report. But I cannot go beyond that. Because this report is a parliamentary process. And Clearford must reflect the position of the committee. But I will honour that.
Thank you, chairperson. Chairperson, to put it bluntly, and you know I've been showing my ranking to everybody who would like to see it. Mr. Shabangu appeared on the last position in my ranking list. I've gone back to my notes. I've gone back to his CV. I want to put it to you bluntly, all I could find in his CV in his favor is his 26 years of membership of the ANC, his membership of the Communist Party, his membership of SANCO. Mr. Shabangu didn't answer the questions. He had a terrible interview. I've asked already, and the chairperson has already given me an indication that she would support me in getting the taped version of that interview, the recorded version. I will go back to that again, and I am convinced that quoting from Mr. Shabangu's interview, that it will be an embarrassment for this committee if one starts showing to the world what Mr. Shabangu said during that interview. If it's not, then good luck. I am just afraid, chairperson, that we are not learning from the lessons of the last 15 years. And I feel very, very strongly about that. I've not consulted with my party because, as I've said before, my party wasn't in the interviews. I can't understand how people can take part in a process when they've not been in the interviews, when we've said the interviews have been critical. I've been one of three people who sat through all these interviews. I'm one of three people who was appointed by this committee to steer this process. I've really taken part in this open-mindedly. I'm not under instruction of any party to get anybody on this committee. But I can't live with the fact that the person ranked in the 22nd position on my list is now being proposed as one of the four positions that are open to people that don't have a specific profession. So that is unfortunately my position, and I stand by that, chairperson. Thank you. Thank you, chairperson. I will also just take the public gallery because I want to be able to witness how this committee is going to deal with this issue. But I think it's a thorny issue, and I wish you luck in chairing this process.
I want to point out from the CV you were given that he was a member of the Conservation Board as well as the National Home Builders Council, apart from the points you have made. Honourable, Kwabaso, and then Honourable Khadebe.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I want to appreciate you allowing me to speak because I've not sat in this process in the first instance due to factors outside my control. Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do want to say that
having listened to the process on Wednesday and today, I have found, in my own understanding, that this committee has kept to the principles that it had put for itself through and through, including the, you know, the legal questions that were raised this morning. This committee, this process has been kept within, first, the rules of Parliament, secondly, within the legal parameters. It is, however, regrettable that the DA withdraws from the process on the basis that one candidate is said to have scored very low, when in fact this committee had never said it would restrict itself to the scores only for it to decide who becomes, who is recommended and not. A number of other principles were set in, guidelines and so on and so on. I would understand the position of the DA now to suggest that they're uncomfortable with the rural consideration as part of decision making, the principle of ensuring that rural representation is taken on board. I was here when for instance, a remark was made that Gauteng, for instance, was overrepresented in the in the list of names that were suggested. And obviously, members were saying, let's do a geographical spread in considering all of this, including in that geographical spread, not just the nine provinces, but also rural representation. And there's nothing untoward. And there's nothing that goes outside the principles that were set out here. And Chairperson, I do want to say, from this understanding that I've had over the past 2 days sitting here, even if I did not participate in the interview, I am firmly convinced that there is nothing that this committee has done which is illegal, which has undermined the rules of Parliament, which has undermined the very principles that this committee has set for itself to complete this process. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Again, I'll concur with my colleague there that it is regrettable when people leave the process which they started, because I don't think that when they're here, they only represent their jacket. They are representing a particular constituency where they come from. So what I'll appeal here, Honourable Chairperson, is that the proposal on the name of Mr. Shabangu is correct. Mr. Fanovesi is true when he said that we used to share our scores. He'll be surprised that even on the list of Mr. Mpatele, the person who got the highest score there was Mr. Shabangu. He said the first person to give a fight was Mr. Shabangu. I think that I expect Mr. Fanovesi not to have understood Mr. Shabangu because of the language problem. But we know, Chairperson, what he was trying to express all along. But that one is a bridge under the water. And then number two, I think that it must be on record on this committee that the ANC does not agree that this process was fraudulent. This process was not fraudulent. It was transparent and lived up to all the legal requirements as they needed. I can take, for example, just like the issue, those issues of disability, those issues of rural development, the subcommittee put it, but what is critical here is that the Act makes certain provisions that a person must have experience with regard to matters connected with the functions of the board. It didn't say specifically the National Lottery Board. It said all the working functions of the board. Mr. Shabangu belonged to numerous boards.
That's why he's working. So that's why he could be able to articulate things which other people could not articulate. But what is also critical, Chairperson, although the withdrawal is regrettable, but what is critical here is that there was no other counter proposal which came from the DA. So it means that we have one position on the floor here. It is that one of Mr. Shabangu and Ms. Ndilega Loliliane. Yeah, that's the only two names which are on the floor. So it means that we don't need to vote because there is no other name except those two. So I appeal to the committee to move forward. But for the sake of being on the safe side, I propose that those two members who came in here, they can be co-opted if there's a problem. Thank you. There's only one position on the floor. That one of Shabang, and there's no other position. So I'll appeal that. Let's proceed with this. Thank you.
At this stage, just to address your last point, there are 8 members of the committee here. As we sit.
No.
Then I cannot co-opt anyone unless the quorum falls. But I did recognize Honorable Mabasa.
Now, Comrade Chair, I want to also to express that it's regrettable that the DA is stepping aside from the process, because the reason, by definition, the process of evaluating candidates by its very definition means that different members of the committee are going to give different points or are going to award different points to candidates. Actually, that is the main aim. So the mere fact that the marks that are awarded by Mr. Khadebe are different from the marks awarded by Mr. Van der Westhuizen, that cannot be a valid reason for saying that the process is flawed. I just wanted to make that point, so that it would even be appropriate if DA. But you had already said that, Comrade Chair, when you had said you suggest they don't leave the process. But I also just want to reiterate the reason that they are giving. It's not a valid reason, really. When they re-examine, they even on their own will realize that they made a mistake for leaving for that reason, because there is no way myself and Member Kumalo are going to give the same marks under every item as we evaluate candidates. By nature, we are supposed to give different points. It's just that at the end, those points are guidelines, and those that will have scored highest will be the people that we take. So I just wanted to expand on this point there.
Honorable Oriane Ambrosini, one is entitled to sit wherever one likes. But mine is another question. I'm hoping you have rejoined the process, and I know that you hadn't removed yourself, but you are the sort of Member of Parliament that seems to be in and out because you're on all these different committees. So I just want to make sure that you're staying here a while, because you did indicate at the beginning that one of the members of your party you only recently heard would not be here, and you were coming in the Honourable Lavinia's place. So I just want to confirm that.
Madam Chairman, I ask for your forgiveness. I came here to help find myself into a cast site, and I don't know who to scratch. I've asked my chief whip to give me directions. I don't want to agree to something that Ms. Lavinia did not agree. Unfortunately, I was not briefed. I lent my body. I'm not in the position of lending my mind.
I think you will be aware from our minutes. Certainly, every one of these meetings are recorded as well. That the Honourable Lavinia did participate in the process, as you quite rightly say, and did put names on the table as well. Yes, but we had not finalised the process, unfortunately. Yes, Honourable Lyon.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, at this point in time, there are only one position on the table, and that is the proposal from Honourable Khadebe, and I'm seconding that proposal. Thank you.
Yes, I was also just being consulted by the committee secretary in this instance. I just want to complete that consultation. I hear that it has been seconded, but just a minute, please. I'm going to actually have a 2-minute adjournment because we've got to go through some issues here before we finalise anything, and I'm just being brief. But you're welcome to also confer.
Now I'm very poor. If he comes now, I'll thank you. You feel on this trouble here?
Honourable members, we've just got another minute. The committee secretary is just confirming the procedure with the manager in that area. Lawazi, Mahlangu, will be dealing with your item in the next 5 minutes. I have to just wait to hear what the committee secretary is saying before we move on. Thank you. I don't know. But you can go and check yourself, Miss Hurley. I want to just remind you where we are. We have had a proposal, and I want to refresh my memory. Was it originally from the Honourable Khadebe, was it, that we have six names? Was it from yourself, Honourable Khadebe, the proposal? And while the committee was open, Honourable Lyne, it's always useful to hold one meeting and not three. Honourable Lyne, you had seconded it. So I want to just have that proposal again, Honourable, on tape.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. As I said, that according when we started, we had already agreed on four names. That is what Professor Nebutanda as the chairperson of the board. Number two, Mr. Negota from the legal fraternity. Number three, Ms. Mukoka from the chartered, from the accountant side. Number four, Mr. Reddy, were adopted in the previous portfolio committee meeting. So it means that we had only two outstanding names. So I proposed two names from the short list which we had. I proposed the name of Mr. Shabangu. And then I propose the name of Ms. Ndelane Lolilane. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Lyne.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm seconding the proposal of Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections? Or are there any other names? Any other proposals? There's no need to vote.
Yes, I do object.
Right.
And I would like to have the opportunity for a statement. Madam Chair, I find myself in an ambiguous position. I came here to lend my body for a quorum, and I've been asked to come in to be here to provide a quorum. And I decided to come in because of I recognize that the ANC is the ruling party and has the power to do as it wishes, through a stratagem of impairing the power, because there are not enough people, there is no political significance, and therefore that accounts for the fact that I'm here. But I have consulted with the colleagues Marais and Van der Westhuizen, who I hold in high esteem, and I have experience in other committees in which I serve and gone through similar processes, that often positions are given to people who need a job and not to the best qualified person for the position. And on the basis of my being here, I don't think that I can just lend to this process my body. I'm constitutionally required to lend my mind, and on the basis of the information I acquired in the past 20 minutes, I cannot lend my support to nominating somebody who might be very good but is not the best, and I think that the country requires for us to appoint the best, and on that ground I cannot support it. Thank you.
Right, so I just want to get a clear position from yourself, Honourable Ariane Ambrosini. Are you abstaining or objecting?
I'm objecting, but you do have the vote to pass it through, so I object.
I don't wish to take it further. I want to conclude this, and then I will take comments, because at this stage I'm required to undertaken as chairperson what I have undertaken to ensure was done. I've established that we do have a quorum from the committee secretary, and on that basis, while it is regrettable, the withdrawal of the Democratic Alliance, it is unfortunate that the Honorable Lavinia, due to very personal issues, her mother being so critically ill, is not here, and that the alternate, Honorable Ariane Ambrosini, as he has acknowledged, is not completely brief, but has done his consultation, and we reach this position. However, I satisfy myself that we have fulfilled the requirements of making this decision, and on that basis, there's no need for a vote, because we in fact have a quorum and we have six names. The legislation requires, or not the legislation, but the speaker's letter and referral to this committee requires that we forward to him and to the minister the name of the recommendation for a chairperson and the name of five other members as recommendations, because the seventh member of the board comes directly under the appointment as from the department itself. We have fulfilled the requirements referred to us in this letter, and therefore I now ask the I now move for adoption the recommendation of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, and that is the recommendation that will go through to the Speaker and the Minister of the of Trade and Industry. Just a minute. I am being asked by the, or advised by the committee secretary, we have a choice of reading through the full report, which is three pages, or I'm advised that I can read the, make this full report available to you. I've asked, where does everyone have this full report? Only just been done, you see. Is it possible to put it on the screen? And then the obligation that I have is to announce the names. So this report, just to indicate, is a draft report of the committee. And in the draft report, and I'm not reading it word for word, it simply gives the introduction, as it probably reiterates the processes that we have undertaken. And there is one thing that is not captured in this board. It is the point that I made that should be captured, and that is the final aspect of this committee, which needs to be captured in this report. And that is the withdrawal and the position. And here I read that. So we considered the short list, which was 23 names, and one of the, and those 23 names are, this is the order in which we were given them by administration. Ms. Pieka, Mr. Nayaka, Mr. Vipons, Mr. Reddy, Mr. Badenhorst, Mr. Maputsa, Mr. Letlape, Ms. Dinah, Ms. Brenner, Professor Neviutanda, Mr. Nkosi, Mr. Swana, Mr. Nakota, Ms. Loyalane, Mr. Tibedi, Ms. Bahula, Mr. Simalane, Mr. Mankochi Kotwa, Ms. Maloto Stofili, Mr. Vusu Muzi Nkosi, because there were two. Mr. Alan Beasley withdrew his own nomination. Mr. Shabangu, Ms. Makoka. That was a long list of interviews. Prior to the interviews, as indicated, Mr. Alan Beasley declined his nomination due to the fact that he's currently employed by an NGO that would be submitting a funding request in future to the National Lotteries Board. After having considered the shortlist and after having interviewed the candidates, on the 27th, 28th, 30th of October 2009 and 2nd of November 2009, the committee recommends that the following candidates be appointed as chairperson of the National Lotteries Board. Professor Neviutanda. The committee further recommends that the following candidates be appointed as members of the National Lotteries Board. Mr. Nahota, as the to comply with the practicing lawyer side of it. Ms. Makoka, to satisfy the legal requirement of a chartered accountant requires. Mr. Reddy, as one of the candidates. Mr. Shabangu, as another not candidate or recommendation, and Ms. Loyalane. On the 2nd of November, this is what they have not captured because it's happened now. Obviously, the English will have to be cleaned up because I am speaking to it and it hasn't been written down. On the 2nd of November, the committee resumed their deliberations on the matter of in which four candidates, was agreed that four nominees had already been recommended, the chairperson and three others. And we still had to finalize two further candidates. After vigorous or robust deliberation from all members of the committee, and after the recommendation process had been completed, the Democratic Alliance indicated that they could not continue with the process and indicated to the chairperson that they would withdraw. Now, I'm stopping there, not for it to recognize any hand, but just to consult the committee secretary.
The mistake of the date is not the second, it's the fourth.
Yes, sorry, the fourth. Obviously, that's a very material and substantive issue. That they would withdraw. The IFP also made a statement. Now, I don't want to make it out of your presence, please. We don't have to say also made a statement, sorry. I'm doing this as I think and remember. Also...
May we just, can you say the IFP voted against the nomination?
We didn't vote. That's the point. Also, let me... Sorry, I have been brought back on track. We have to vote. Yes?
What I would suggest is to say that an motion with the names was duly moved, and it was moved and duly seconded, and was carried by the votes, and the FP voted against.
Yeah. Okay, in that case, the content specialist will have to go back before the objection to say the nominations were duly moved and seconded. You need to put that in first. Duly moved and seconded, full stop. The IFP raised an objection or voted against. Is that what you say?
The motion was supported.
Was adopted.
With the, notwithstanding the FP having voted against it.
Thank you for that. So you have to put the motion was adopted. Yes, let me just finish the sentence in my head. You can correct it afterwards. Can we put it down? The motion was adopted. Right. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, I would like it to be put that in the absence of any other name being proposed, the names were accepted and the IFP objected. That's
that was the only option. That was the only motion on the table. So, in the absence of any other motion,
I'll tell you why there wasn't another motion.
So then let's put it as such: in the absence of any other motion, there was the decision was accepted, and the IFP objected. It was adopted, and the IFP objected.
I want to chair
the meeting, so I want the content specialist to capture these points, and when we've seen it up here, let's look at it. Capture the points that are made, please. You hear the points? All right, now I'll check my own screen. Members spoke through the chair, so now let's get it on record. Yes, Honourable Hadid.
Well, Honourable Chairperson, that's why that I don't want this process to be challenged in any other way. That's why that on the 4th, we adopted the four names. That's why when I was speaking about that, I said on the 4th, we adopted, unanimously adopted the Professor Nebutanda as the nominated chairperson of the board. We adopted Mr. Nagota, Ms. Mukoka, plus Mr. Reggie.
That's what we adopted. On the 6th today, we left with the two vacancies. That's why on the 6th, we further adopted the names of Mr. Shabangu and Ms. Lolilane. And then what is also critical in the process is that... Yeah. What is important about this process is that those were the only two names which were on the floor and seconded. Whatever. So when the ISP objected, there was no any other name. So the motion was carried through.
Right. You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to go through this once more from this part. We are, the names are there. That's the reality. Now, on the 4th of November 2009, the committee resumed deliberations on the matter, on which four nominees had been recommended and two further candidates had yet to be decided. Had yet. On the 6th of November 2009, after vigorous deliberations by the committee, the Democratic Alliance indicated they could not continue with the process and withdrew. You don't have to say indicated to the chair because I cannot take interruptions left, right, and centre. Now, I want one thing clear. If I chair, I need to continue what I'm chairing on. And then members, including committee secretaries, can put their point in. Otherwise, it's difficult. I don't even hear with my left ear. On the 6th of November, after vigorous deliberations by the committee, the Democratic Alliance indicated that they could not continue with the process and withdrew. The nominations were duly moved and seconded, in the absence of any other motion. The motion was adopted, full stop. The ISP raised its objections. The ISP's objections were noted. Not raised, I've just altered it as I talk. The Carter Freedom Party noted its objections. Is that, now I'm looking at the ISP, you're right, present, so I think this does capture what was said. Now, that is what you're going to talk to, what you see up there. Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Khadebe.
Thanks, Colin Chair. Immediately after, on the third line of the second paragraph, after withdrew, we must then insert a sentence that captures the reason. And let me state it that the reason for the withdrawal was, in the opinion of DA, comma, that unduly more points had been scored to the benefit of Mr. Shabangu.
Before I put my own remark on the table as chairperson, let me take the Honourable Khadebe on, followed by Honourable Pele.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, I think that on the 6th, those names which were put forward must be stated. They must be stated that the motion carried the names of Mr. Shabangu and Ms. Loliane. It must be captured there. And then also the reason for these people, there's no need for that.
And then let us, after we find that, let's conclude this matter and pass.
Honorable Pillay.
Madam Chair, I'm having difficulty in this meeting, Madam Chair. Maybe I'm new in this. I was sent here for some other reasons, but I would like, that's why we have a secretary and others to record minutes when it's happening. I would like the meeting to continue. We finish the meeting and minutes can be written thereafter, a statement can be written thereafter. Now we are having minutes being drawn up in a meeting and we are correcting minutes while we think. The issue was for me very clear. This morning when we came in here, we had to consider two names, additional names. In the process, there was an issue that was discussed about a quorum. The second issue was who can vote. We decided that the quorum can be made up of any people that were participating, but only those people that were going to vote were going to participate in the deliberations to keep the process democratic. Thirdly, following that process was accepted, there were nominations of two names. Following the nominations of the two names after motivation, which two names was duly seconded, the Democratic Alliance withdrew from the process because they felt that the two names did not fit the criteria that were set up before. They left the meeting without proposing any alternative names to be considered. Subsequent to that, the meeting reconvened again and the two names were duly proposed, seconded and accepted, notwithstanding the objection of the IFP, which says that because there were no other names, but they objected to the names because they felt that it didn't give a reason. Now I'm saying that is the meeting, we must adopt that and move on with the meeting because we have got other things to do and we can draw up the statement later, please.
With due respect, we are required to record how the adoption proceeded. That is how every committee has moved that I've sat in the previous 5 years. And this is not simply in the nature of minutes at all. There's a report that is required to go along. So it is important that we capture exactly the requirements, which is why we consulted with procedure. And we are moving on that basis. And having consulted with procedure, that is how we are moving forward. So all we want to capture is ensure that there's no misunderstanding that this, as the report, will go forward to the minister and the speaker. And that is what we are adopting. And we don't want any misunderstanding from any member sitting in the committee or even those who have withdrawn about what went on. But as for all these little extras, they are not required. That's the point I'm making here. I said I would speak afterwards. All we need to capture is the withdrawal. All we need to capture is any objections. All we need to capture is that it's adopted. Those are the 3 points captured. And we must capture the name. Anything else goes in the minutes, as you quite rightly say. These are not minutes, and must I make that clear? And no, I don't write the minutes. All we are doing is fulfilling a requirement. And I just wanted to finish this part to simply say what will remain in is this. The 6th of November, that the Democratic Party withdrew, we do not have to give the reason for that withdrawal. It's not a requirement. We then have to give any objections raised. We've done that. The English can be cleaned up, but the substance remains. So that is what we are adopting. I can't see the rest of the screen and neither can you. So we'll ask the content specialist just to take us a little bit back where we see the names, all the names. right, and we have them there in that order. Six names, which includes the chairperson. We have fulfilled the requirements referred to us, and this recommendation will go to the minister and to the speaker. Honorable Ambrosini?
I'm covered and satisfied.
Now, honorable members, we've been through quite a sauna bath of deliberations. And it's a good thing we've all remained on board. And we do have a short other piece of business to conclude. Oh, here. Thank you. You were sitting down there. Right. Now, but before you even speak, can I just raise one question to the honourable members? We said we may finish at 12:30, but the goal is 12 o'clock. So when I say that, I know flights are a problem, so I look at people on this note. May we continue to 12:30? Right. Because you know what this is for? This is the briefing session only for gambling. Yes, Honourable Kamala.
Chairperson, unfortunately on my side I have to leave at 10.
I do understand. Like I say, this is a briefing. But I want to make sure that all members have got the document. Have you got the document? Has everyone got the document? Right. You may proceed. Mr. Mishlangu, the committee researcher will now brief us as the committee requested.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, in the interest of time, I think I'll gamble through these slides as quickly as I can. The document has been circulated on the review of the National Gambling Legislation. The presentation actually is an extract from that piece of document, so I'll be actually going over that one. And also, the presentation captures all forms of all forms of gambling, but may much emphasis is on the casinos, which are key in this area. Just to give an overview, to give a contextual background, why people gamble, socio-economic impact, which is the main thing. One is responding to the advert that was sent out in reviewing this legislation. Misleading advertising, which is one of the components that was also in the, and cross-border gambling is also one of the other components. And then also put concluding remarks. Now, just a background is gambling, according to most studies, was restricted in South Africa as early as 1673. Now, restricted, you could mean two things, controlled or limited. So which means there was some form of gambling since then. And the Act of 1995 was an act in 1965 which was officially came in to be to try and control or regulate this gambling, and also banned all forms of gambling except on horse racing. And then by the late 1970s, casino in these areas of Botswana, Sky, Transkei and Venda were seen to be operating by the 1970s. And by 1995, it was estimated that 2,000 casinos were operating illegally. So it's against this backdrop or this background that we're reviewing how the legislation was introduced to address some of these problems. Now, just to give a big piece of detail on why people gamble, these are some of the points captured and will address, speak mainly to some of the effects or socio-economic impact of gambling. Now, it's been noted that some gamblers respond to some sort of emotional stress. Boredom and depression have been noted as one, the two main ones that have led people to gamble. Financial strain, assumed that or gamblers perceive themselves as that gambling can only solve their problems, and they can only solve that with the hope of winning. So the more they gamble, and the hope or the training in gambling gives them that hope that they will win and they'll solve their financial problems. And then a form of entertainment, which is one of the key elements in gambling, was put across by some people that will gamble. Now, just start off with the quote by Paul Samuelson, the New York Keynesian economist, put that gambling involves simply sterile transfer of money, goods, and between individuals, creating no new money. Although it creates no output, gambling does nevertheless absorb time and resources. And when pursued beyond the limits of recreation, where the main purpose, after all, is to kill time, gambling subtracts from the national income. So that premise on the economic model or the economic equation of money times velocity, the rate at which money moves from one end to another, giving us your P times Y, your price times the quantity or output that is produced in the economy. So we're looking at the monetary sector, which basically represents the monetary sector. So from that code, it says it does not create any money. So there's no creation of money in that, and therefore will not create or will not contribute to our level of GDP, therefore it subtracts. So gambling in its sense is does not create or does not contribute to GDP, but it's merely a transfer of money which is already in existence. Now the benefits from gambling, it's been advocated by most studies that or most governments that gambling contributes to employment, creates employment, and to a certain extent, there's growth in the hotels and in the entertainment industry. And also some areas have recorded infrastructure improvement or new infrastructure. And also around the gambling, both the casinos, the big establishments, you find that there's growth in retail establishments. And also some social external benefits, which are mostly borne by the consumers around. Social external benefits such as the scenery, the lighting, the infrastructure captures quite a number of social benefits. And then the cost thereof of gambling, there are those benefits, but now looking at the benefits, there are costs attached to each benefit. Now the question is, how do you weigh these costs versus the benefits? Now some of the costs is with the gambling or with the introduction of these casinos, they do create employment, but the problem is they have low payment or they pay very little, and most of these positions are part-time and with no benefits. That's basically comparing with what you call welfare roles, or probably put it in South African terms, grants. So people juggle between getting a position or part-time position or whether they go for grants. So that's better with that. Now, it also increase in debt problems and bankruptcy, which is one of the issues that has come up with leading to problem gambling. Increase in property value, forcing small shops out of business. So that is where there's a new establishment, which was a positive in the fact that there is establishment, but the cost thereof is that of pushing small businesses out. And we've seen that mostly it's restaurants and other small shops. And then there's an increase in the number of pawn shops and second-hand goods shops. That is the problem of gambling, where it's more contributing to social impact or social adverse social impact. That is where people will sell and will do anything to get money to go and gamble. And then also the financial distress, that will be seen where people move from one place to another. That is when they see that the casino in a certain area will move to that. So they'll carry that financial burden with them, with the hope that they'll get a job, and only find that those part-time jobs actually create more burden. So it leads to that financial distress. So increase in traffic and overcrowding, that deals with the location of these the casinos. So there's some communities have actually complained with that, the increase in traffic and overcrowding. There's increasing problems with homelessness, child neglect, and also the issue of people who do anything to get money to gamble. So there's also an adverse, and may lead to service delivery problems. That talks mainly to migration, where people move from one place to another, and that increases. An example would be people moving from one town to another, to a town where there's a casino. So that increases the number of population. It increases the number of people. So we're talking of the population versus the revenue that is drawn by local municipalities, taxes, and how this redistribution effect are. So looking at the redistribution rate versus the population growth rate as through that labor migration. So that also is a problem of people moving from one place to another. Now the social benefits. Now those were economic benefits, economic effects. Now the social effects, which are not easy to measure, and hence it becomes difficult to see the benefit of gambling, because you both have the economic impact and you've got the social impact. So it becomes difficult to measure social impact. Hence, there is always a negative, or there's always something negative about the benefit that you receive. Now, if you look at the social effects, it's increasing crime, which has been recorded, mostly youth, and there's also this issue of illegal gambling, which also promotes, where we see a lot of youth gambling. Now, the issues of issuing of credit cards, issues of underage, and also has also led to this kind of youth gambling illegal. Illegal gambling increased due to lack of awareness and knowledge. Some gamble, they don't know the results, they don't know where it will take them, they're not informed of what is happening, so they gamble. Frequent credit card debt is one of the things that has been recorded as social effect. Increase in domestic violence and child neglect. This is where we see most of the, one example is Grand West. Parents will take their kids, and then there are areas where kids are left, especially cinemas, and then the parents go and gamble. So the kids walk around. Some actually left the car park, and so kids walk around and they become exposed to some of the places. So it also leads to that child neglect. So those are some of the social benefits that have been put across or put forward. Increase in family stress, including high rate of divorce. In some communities, they've really recorded that suicide. And general mental health problems. I'll speak generally. It's one of the recommendations how to address that issue. That is factoring in some of these social programs or some of these social impacts into the health system as a way of addressing the issue of care problem gambling. And also the high rate of substance abuse, the new drug related, and we see a lot of it in youth that has been recorded. And uneasiness caused by gambling in religious communities. I think the most one that has been vocal is the Salvation Army on this issue. Right. The second point is on the misleading advertising. This is connected to it's linked to the socio-economic impacts, because it's about how it's advertised, how do you receive the information, and how the human mind works, how it processes this information when they see it on TV or in media. And advertising in a sense has been is defined as or described as it's a paid form of communication, communicating a message by use of various media with the goal to persuade, inform, influence the purchasing behavior or thought pattern of the individual. So now if the information that comes on TV, it's how the information is brought to the individual, and then what is the action after that. And what we see with most of this is the social impacts of gambling are often hidden in most of these adverts. You don't see the social impact, but they always bring out the economic benefits. But the social impacts are hidden from that. and advertising show the number of people who have ruined their lives, it doesn't show that that is a social impact, that a lot of people have suffered, but that would not come out in an advert. An advert will always show a person winning, but it will not show you how to get to a point of winning. So it only shows people how they win, how they use celebrities, and what you can actually get once you have won, but will not show the number of people who have suffered from this problem of gambling. So others usually don't care that. And then they also use this, what you call predatory marketing strategies, like higher purchase schemes. Now, these strategies, they make you believe or convince individuals that they can actually afford when they can't. Mostly poor, they're told you can actually afford by restructuring their finance packages or their funding packages. And hire to purchase, for instance, they will structure it in such a way that you convince yourself that you can actually pay this. And the intention with the hire purchases is to collect as much as possible in terms of initial payments in the first few months, and knowing very well that the consumer will default probably in 3-4 months, and then that item will be taken away from the, will be repossessed and resolved. So those are some of the issues, strategies that are used in marketing, convincing people. And I mean, detergents also, it's not a gambling issue. I mean, all forms of marketing, even non-gambling products also use this kind of marketing strategy. I mean, we've seen in detergents where it washes whiter than white, or makes white whiter. It goes to the extent of showing that it washes whiter than white itself. So there's that element of the blue, magic blue ingredient that's put in. So those are some of the things that advertising will always give, which will always show you the benefits of taking the product or gambling, but will not show you the impact, the social impact or the harm they cause to the community. Also, the issuing of credit and complementary goods and services through loyalty programs is also another form of advertising, which is also misleading, because you would think it's a loyalty program, but unknowing to you, they're actually pulling you through inducing or probably a way of another social impact of gambling. For example, loyalty programs, it's things like you play in a certain machine and then you get credit, or for this you get a credit, or you buy this commodity, you get a credit. So these are some of the things. It's also a form of advertising, but the more they tell you, the more credit you get, you get this probably holiday in or a trip for two and stuff. So that also induces you or makes one feel part of the program, the loyalty program, or feel part of the organization. And also offering free drinks under the VIP status makes one feel very important, and knowing to them that induces them to gamble recklessly. So that's one of the social impact, that it will not come out that way, but it will come out as a VIP status, which is a benefit, but indirectly you end up gambling recklessly. Now, in some parts, say the role of government in this case, in terms of advertising, would be to set limit on promotion and advertising of gambling. And some have gone to the point of advertising needs to be confined to other viewing hours, which is also difficult or a problem. When do you determine the hours? And this is a household issue. It's not something that is it's in public, so it becomes difficult. And legislation should be enacted for all advertising to carry a warning of the negative effects of gambling, which in advertising mostly is just the benefits, and does not carry this kind of doesn't show the social impact. And then cross-border gambling, it's been noted in a few instances that state or national boundaries are often locations of economic development. And an example of this is I think this is the casino. Is it both casino boats or both casinos? Or the casinos that are located, most of them, they are under tourism and they operate on the boundaries in most cases. They are, an example is between Israel, Jordan, and Egypt, called Eliat. And that's where there's a large market that exists on the other side. So we're talking of imports and exports. So if one needs to be an export-led growth economy, then they will export those services outside. And aren't the WTO, they refer to those as the GATS, the GATS, General Acceptance Trade in Services. So those will be, how do you trade in services? So if foreigners have, tourism will be taken as a service, and that will be import and export services. So one needs to have an export base in order to, and in order to buy into the other market where there's a demand. So you have an export base which is your supply, and then the other market or the other area or the other side of the territory will be your demand side. So how do you balance those? And then the appropriate local taxes, right, where there's, because you're exporting this and the casinos are there, so the government may also, the local authorities may also gain from these casinos through levies and taxes. Now, closing remarks. Now, given the one basis of what's been given, it's one needs to guard against the need to regulate. Well, there's a need to regulate on the basis of, well, because it's illegal and already happening, so why not regulate? So one needs to guard against that, because it talks about social responsibility versus fiscal popularity. It's what are the social impacts of this? And we say it's difficult to measure, but we can only see the economic benefits or the economic impacts, negative economic impacts of this. So now, does government want to be popular, or does it want to address the issues of social responsibility? So those are some of the issues that one needs to guard against. And also, when you're talking of the 4 hours of taxes, and which is one of the points that has been raised, that at least there will be some taxes for the local authorities. Now, the 4 hours, basically talking of the R, one is the repricing, that taxes are for repricing purposes, that is to discourage or encourage consumption. And the second R is for redistribution purposes. The third R is for revenue, which is one of the reasons why government will impose taxes on these casinos. And the last one is representation, where some people feel that the more they pay, at least they'll be getting more services from the government. So what has come out, linking the 4 hours with the first point, guard against the need to regulate, is if we go in the route of revenue. Now, one needs to look at revenue. It's not a case of, it depends on the demand forces and supply forces, the shape of the demand curve, the inner, the elasticities of the demand curve, how much government can gain from that. So one needs to guard against how much do you charge for that. And also the amount that you receive from taxes, revenue or the rate of redistribution, you need to guard against that. You may collect much, but there's no level of redistribution. So then it feels, then that casino is not doing much for the local economy. So population growth rate versus redistribution, that is the other talking about that. You're looking at the population growth rate, which is said when the labor migration, when people move from one place to another, it increases population. But now the revenue that is received from there, how much does it go down? How much of it is spent on local economic development? So you need to also guard against those kinds. And also look at market forces, the shape of the demand curve and the tax burden. Those are the elasticities of the demand curve. Now, government may be collecting. If they allow a casino, yes, they'll be receiving taxes. But how much of it? Remember, and another thing to point out is gambling when you talk of gambling, the demand curve, we're talking of the consumer preferences and tastes, which may change anytime. So it's not something that you can rely on. So we cannot rely on those kind of taxes, because those changes and can change anytime. There's always a substitution effect where people substitute gambling. Mostly will substitute lotteries and others for casinos. So that can also change. And also the idea or the effect of government regulating on the basis of revenue. What might happen also is if you regulate, it increases the cost of running those casinos. So when then that cost is translated into the prices, gamblers or casinos may use two ways. One, we may increase the price, and for them to be, because they are profit maximizing, they might not get much or as much as they can. So the other possibility for them is to increase the withhold. That is, they will come up with all sorts of machines. Like you've got the 2 cents machine, you've got the 50 cents machine. So you gamble until you find that yes, it's 50 cents. At least it's the lowest price. But you find that for one to actually reach a point where you have found, you have played around, you eventually spend 60 rand. So the actual price of that will be 60 rand, but you'll be given 50 cents coins to actually feel as if that is the lowest price. So the substitution effect is that element, and most people have seen that people have, some have moved from the lotteries, horse racing, betting, and other forms of gambling to casinos. Others have actually shifted to another, in other communities have shifted to that. So that's a substitution effect. And then there's utility versus profit. This is one of the things that has been coming, that gambling does not contribute to economic growth. Yes, it does create employment. The only thing that happens is between the consumer and the producer is that for the producer is for profit maximization. And for the consumer, it's just utility. Utility is the economic term we use for satisfaction, deriving satisfaction from that. So it's a case of satisfaction versus profit. And mostly that satisfaction is taken away by the social impacts, where people then become vulnerable. They become vulnerable. They gamble. They in financial distress and stuff. So the person who benefits mostly becomes the casinos. And then the last one is in some countries, New Zealand, for instance, actually the way to address the problem of gambling is to design a public health model that encompasses those, with the intention to make people aware and then intervene at an early stage, and then that becomes part of the government objective to create a system that is healthy, that will work for everyone. But that has been also contested against by some saying that the public health model system might work and might not work, but might not work on the basis that it's a long-term plan and may go against some of the political terms. So then it might not work in that sense. And then a quote again that says, gambling is a bad social policy. Gambling is a bad economic policy, and the two combined, being social and economic, because social is not easy to measure, so the two combined give us a bad government policy. And with that, because it undermines the moral foundation of society and invites corruption in government. And we've seen some places where there's that corruption in taxes and local authorities and stuff. And the quote close again is that some say it's only a gambling problem if you're losing. So with that, I think, Chair, I'll see you.
First of all, we'd like to thank our committee researcher, Mr. Matlangu, for briefing us on this. As you know, we had asked him to do this on Wednesday and ran out of time, and he would have been again given 3 hours now, and again we ran out of time. So simply a briefing. We tasked our researcher to conduct this research and brief us before we undertook the hearings on public on gambling, the public hearings on gambling, which will take place, is it next week? So is there any questions for clarification? This is not in the nature of political policies or anything, but rather trying to give us an understanding and a background in this regard. So any clarification? Yes. Other than that, it's not really something to effectively engage on. We would hope that all members have received something that is called the Review of the National Gambling Legislation. Has everyone got that? And the other one is the Review of the Gambling Act.
So I think
free to ask questions, get clarification. For members of the public present here now, half of our committee are on other committees, and some have had to get urgent flights. Yes, Honourable Ariane Ambrosini.
Sorry, Madam Chairman, but you asked me to stay. No, I agree. This is an excellent presentation, and it touched on all the points of a certain argument, but it is a biased presentation. It may have the correct bias, but it is a bias nonetheless. And I would like it, for our benefit and for the benefit of further discussion, to be corrected looking at the other side of the argument, which is the anti-prohibitionist argument. Gambling exists, always did, always will, for one reason and one reason only, like sex, wine, and prostitution, or whatever people wanted. And people want it, and what is the reaction of government in respect of a demand of people? How does prohibitionism work? The last slide, which drew the conclusion that gambling is a bad government policy, bypasses the fundamental and philosophical issue of whether or not, where does our authority come on making a policy about what people do with their lives, whether it's good or bad? And that's an issue about smoking, it's an issue about prostitution, and usually the argument is cast between prohibiting it or allowing it, with a solution in between of doing both, prohibiting enough of it that is not, that is discouraged, and allowing enough of it, which is not prohibited, which was the original approach used in the original gambling legislation. And I think that that also needs to be brought to the fore. Otherwise, we won't have a full appreciation of the legislation as it stands now, which allows it under certain conditions on the basis of we don't have the right to prohibit what people want, whether it's prostitution or whether it's smoking or whether it's drinking.
Thank you. Honorable Mabasa?
No, I would also wish to express gratitude on the presentation made, especially because it happens before we engage next week. So, but I will think that one of the issues, unless I've missed it, is crime. You know, as an accompanying threat. But if I have missed it, then, you know. But having made that point, I would also move that most of the issues we will engage in the actual meeting. So now that we have received the presentation, after receiving some few comments, I would propose that we adjourn the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mabasa. Are there any other requests for clarification, comments? I do have just one or two. And that is, and certainly one appreciates the work and the research that you have undertaken. But right at the beginning, you, in the background, as it were, I couldn't quite see, did you say restricted in South Africa in 1673? I wasn't aware we'd gone back four centuries. I just want to try and make sure we were talking about the fourth century. And then you moved in and out there as such. But that's just a small one. The other one is here. When you spoke about benefits, of course, I was also engaging with the content specialist. You spoke about social external benefits, and then you referred to one of the pathologies or negatives, and that is increase in debt problems and bankruptcy. Now, I'm raising just two of these, obviously financial distress, and then you made the point that illegal gambling is increasing due to a lack of awareness and knowledge. A further comment from myself on that would be, I was under the impression that the people who've got these illegal gambling dens did so in the full knowledge of the laws. that they were operating illegally. And that interactive gambling currently is not acceptable under the current legislation, and that anything we may see is outside the law. So I just would like a little clarity on what you mean due to lack of awareness and knowledge, because I thought all these gambling operators who were operating illegally knew they were operating illegally. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The lack of knowledge and awareness is mainly on the part of the gamblers, not the casino, not the provider. And that is also coupled with the person with this kind of misleading advertising. The lack of knowledge and awareness, it talks mainly of the consumer playing, the person who's gambling, not the legislator, not the service provider. So because of the misleading advertisement that you see on TV, because they only show the person winning, so they feel, especially when they're in financial distress, so their only hope is to win. So they'll play with the hope that they will win, and then will try and... So there's that lack of awareness in the sense that the negative social impacts are not communicated to the people before they gamble. So there's that lack of... And this is also an argument that some people have the knowledge, they are aware of it, but because there are programs that deal with gambling problems, they will still gamble with the hope that if it happens to them, at least there's that program to deal with. That program will take care of them. Thanks.
Just one final point that I want to make sure you've responded to all of them. I think one of the requests that we made, and you did tell the committee you weren't sure if it would be possible to get that information, was one had, in reviewing the legislation briefly ourselves, it seemed as if it was supposed to have some sort of local economic benefits, as it were. And you indicated to the committee that, it was more anecdotal than factual. So I just wondered if this was still the case, if such data was still in this grey area.
Thanks, Chair. When you're talking of this local economic benefit, that the way to look at it is, do these casinos contribute to economic development? That's the benefit we're looking at. But what we find out is that if it's in a certain area and there's a casino there and activities happen within that area, it is merely a transfer of money. So it's money from one end to another. It does not create any money. So which means on the monetary side, it doesn't create that. Although it may create jobs, but what happens now is when it comes to job, when you now come to the definition of unemployment, they've got the strict definition and then the expanded definition. What may happen is that the strict definition may say, for instance, it's 10%. Then the expanded is 30%. So if you put a casino there, now those that had lost hope with the casino find their way. So they move from the expanded definition. Because they're now actively looking for employment, they now move. So it may find that unemployment remains unchanged, although it creates jobs, but unemployment remains unchanged in some cases. So there's that benefit. So unless it's a case of there's money coming outside, coming to gamble within that region, then you have money coming into a system that where the money already existed. So you're adding money to that, then there's economic benefit in that sense.
Thank you very much. Any further comments? It certainly does not look like it, so we must take this opportunity, Mr. Mashlongu, to thank you most sincerely. I know that you will be with us during the public hearings and so on, so thank you very, very much. And thank you to those committee members who were able to remain with us, and I know that you have other responsibilities now to attend to. Fly safely, drive safely, and come back on Tuesday. The next meeting, the committee secretary wants to point out, is on the 11th. Where?
I think we'll meet you for now.
If you consult the ABC, it should be 2249. Thank you very much. I would certainly like to ask, I keep remaining behind for a minute, as the